In his 2013 State of the State address, Governor Cuomo appointed Richard Kaufman as the new cabinet-level chairman for energy policy and finance in New York State. By doing so, the governor reaffirmed his commitment to valuing energy as the engine of our modern economy. And to kind of paint the picture a little more broadly, as Assistant Secretary for Energy, I work for Richard, and he and I oversee the energy agencies in the state. That includes the Department of Public Service and NYSERDA, the New York Power Authority, and the Long Island Power Authority. But what the governor is doing by elevating this position to a cabinet-level position, reporting directly to him, is making the energy issues more visible. And because we have so many challenges in New York, I think that was a very wise move. The other thing that we are doing, and making sure that there are no silos, the energy space, there's always conflicting issues, conflicting policy objectives, low rates, clean energy. And our challenge is to try to kind of bring all of those, what seem to be competing objectives, and align them in the same direction. And similarly, state agencies all have their own missions, and they will approach the various energy issues that they touch from the perspective of their own mission. And so when you're dealing with an issue as complex as energy, it's really important that not just the energy agencies are singing from the same song sheet, but that all the agencies that touch energy are moving in the same direction. And to that end, Richard, as this new cabinet-level position, we really call him the energy czar in the state, will be coordinating the activities of other agencies as well to the extent that they touch the energy space. So that will include Department of Environmental Conservation, the Department of State that does our ocean energy management planning that I mentioned earlier, and others. So we're thrilled to have him on board. As our recent storms have shown us, we need a more resilient energy infrastructure. We need to reduce our consumption of energy that contributes to climate change, and we must do all of this while keeping our energy bills down. And to accomplish these objectives, we must develop and transition to a self-sustaining clean energy economy that will both deliver new jobs and clean the air. My typical speech tends to focus on the things that we are doing to achieve these goals. Living in my Albany bubble, it's always surprising to me that more people don't know about all of the clean energy programs and initiatives that we offer. And so I like to take advantage of these types of settings to spread the word. Richard's typical speech tends to focus on the things we need to do and the things that we should be thinking about to meet the long-term energy challenges and to ensure the success of our programs that are in place today. So since you were expecting to hear from Richard, I'll attempt to give you a little bit of both. Today I'll discuss with you areas where we think there may be market gaps or failures that government can be instrumental in addressing. I'll talk about some of our existing and new initiatives that are beginning to address these issues, and share with you some of our thinking about the challenges and opportunities we see on the horizon as we scale up the deployment of clean energy initiatives. Let's start with how we're doing today. Since 2003, we've seen continuing expansion and improvements to our clean energy policies and programs. Currently, various New York State entities collect and spend $1.4 billion per year on renewables and energy efficiency. The state's Renewable Portfolio Standard, approved by the Public Service Commission and implemented by NYSERDA, has an annual budget approaching $300 million and is providing incentives to leverage significant private investment in both utility-scale renewables like wind and biomass and distributed resources like solar anaerobic digesters and backyard wind. The program has induced the development of nearly 2,000 megawatts of renewables. That's more than any state east of the Mississippi. The program also funds the largest component of the New York Sun Initiative, launched by Governor Cuomo in his 2012 State of the State address. In 2012, the initiative led to the successful installation of over 58 megawatts of solar PV in the state, nearly doubling the amount of customer-sited PV installed in 2011. Last month, NYSERDA announced another series of awards for an additional 52 megawatts of solar, which, combined with the 2012 installations and combined with the installations on Long Island, supported by the Long Island Power Authority, means that more PV systems are being developed under New York Sun in these last couple of years than in the entire prior decade combined. Our energy efficiency offerings are more robust than ever, with incentive programs administered by NYSERDA, utilities, the New York Power Authority, and our housing agencies. We've launched new financing programs with some municipalities offering PACE programs, the Property Assessed Clean Energy financing. These are loans for retrofits that are paid back via a surcharge on property tax bills. We've launched on-bill recovery loan programs that allow consumers to pay back loans for retrofits via their utility bills. In addition, the New York Power Authority is financing retrofits at public buildings, state buildings, and municipal buildings all around the state. And that's to help achieve the governor's Build Smart New York initiative goal to reduce energy consumption in state buildings 20% over the next 7 years. Governor Cuomo has also taken a number of steps to address permitting and siting issues that are barriers to clean energy development. In 2011, we enacted new legislation to create a streamlined power plant siting process that included a carbon dioxide performance standard, new protections for disproportionately burdened communities, so-called environmental justice communities, and importantly for wind developers, a statewide process for siting rather than a patchwork of local zoning rules. Under New York Sun, we are also funding efforts to streamline the inspection and permitting process for solar installations at the local level. Another barrier to large-scale wind development is delivering the wind resource. You heard from Gary during the Q&A and during his remarks about our Energy Highway Initiative to try to reduce transmission congestion. What Gary didn't mention is, in addition to the efforts that we are taking to upgrade our existing transmission rights-of-way, these areas of the system where there are the bottlenecks, we're also working with the New York Power Authority to make improvements to their piece of the system. They own a good deal of the transmission system in New York, to bring transmission to areas of the state with good wind resources so that it reduces the interconnection cost of future projects. The governor has also continued New York's leadership in the multi-state regional greenhouse gas initiative, the nation's first carbon cap and invest program. For those of you who don't know about RGGI, all major power plants in RGGI states must buy carbon allowances for every ton of carbon dioxide they emit. There's a cap on the available allowance that declines over time, creating a market incentive to invest in more efficient and lower emitting power generation sources. The revenues from the sale of each state's allowances are then used to invest in clean energy programs. One of the programs funded in New York by RGGI is the governor's Cleaner, Greener Communities Initiative. We talked before a little bit about linkages from municipality to municipality and NRDC's good work in helping cities develop energy efficiency initiatives. Our initiative through the Cleaner, Greener Communities is linked with our Regional Economic Development Council approach. The governor formed 10 regions in the state for regional economic development strategies. Those councils that were appointed by the governor have developed regional economic development strategies that are unique to their region's strengths. And under the Cleaner Greener Communities program, we've offered grants from NYSERDA for those communities within those regions to work together to develop sustainability plans that can be woven directly into their larger economic development strategy. Following the completion of those grants, NYSERDA will provide implementation grants to each of the 10 regions. We have about $100 million available from the RGGI program to fund implementation of the best sustainability plans. It's really by investing the RGGI revenues in programs like Cleaner Greener that states are realizing enormous economic benefits. An analysis of the economic impact of RGGI found that the first 3 years of the program will result in substantial benefits. The analysis found customers saved nearly $1.1 billion on electricity bills and an additional $174 million on natural gas and heating bills through efficiency retrofits. That's a total of $1.3 billion in savings over the next decade through the installation of these efficiency measures using the funding from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. 16,000 jobs will be created during that time, and reduced demand for fossil fuels keeps more than $765 million in the local economy in those RGGI states. Due to the program's success and other economic factors, emissions, CO2 emissions, declined more rapidly than the cap itself was declining. So we found ourselves in a position where our actual emissions last year were significantly below what the cap was. And so the RGGI states were faced with a need to make improvements to the program. This in, you know, a political context where the federal government has been unwilling, unable to really move on addressing carbon dioxide emissions. In his State of the State address this year, the governor called for the cap to be lowered to ensure that we continue to reduce emissions beyond today's levels. As the largest state in the program, this helped to influence some of the states who are on the fence, and I think that really helped make the difference for a state agreement among all the RGGI states in February to lower the cap. We're also taking steps in the transportation sector, which is responsible for about 40% of New York's carbon dioxide emissions, to reduce emissions and to reduce consumer transportation costs. We talked a little bit about this earlier. The governor launched the Charge New York initiative. That was in this year's State of the State, and we're taking a multifaceted approach here. We've started to fund charging stations. Some grants through NYSERDA were awarded earlier this week. And we're also taking a deeper dive looking at what types of utility barriers exist to electric vehicle deployment and looking for ways that the utilities can partner with the state and with consumers to provide the right rate incentives and other mechanisms to encourage deployment and make the vehicles a more economic choice for consumers. To that end, Gary and his team at the Public Service Commission will be commencing a conference of stakeholders, posing a number of questions. What are the barriers? Inviting the stakeholders in to bring their comments to the table. And it's really through this type of process that we can typically find consensus and develop recommendations for policy changes that the commission can then implement. So we're looking forward to that later this year. So that's what we're doing. And we're pretty proud of how much we've accomplished. But the truth of the matter is, the percentage of non-hydro renewables in our system is still in the single digits. We're still wasting about 25% of the energy we consume. And there are only a couple of thousand electric vehicles on the road in New York. So this is where Richard comes in. And, you know, Richard is bringing to the table some very fresh thinking, fresh perspective, and forcing us all to think about how to build on our past successes and bring clean energy solutions to scale. We're focusing on what more we can do to unleash market forces and what more we need to do to modernize utility systems. Government should always be able to justify its intervention and recognize that if the markets were working perfectly, it wouldn't be needed. However, we know that's not a reality. Guiding principles for the market interventions we are interested in include the desire to catalyze private sector capital, partner with intermediaries in the market that are already making progress but face financing challenges, and to focus on addressing constraints to capital rather than on providing subsidies. In Richard's short time in the administration, we've attended many meetings together, and he often remarks about his different experiences in the private and the public sector. In the private world, he talks about companies bringing ideas to the table that are win-wins, private sector to private sector. In the private sector to the government world, he's observing that many times companies are coming in with win-lose propositions. Companies are typically looking for something for government, a tax break, a subsidy, a relief of some rule. And there's a role for subsidies, and we offer many of them that I just discussed. But these meetings are not always presented in a win-win solution. And as we think about the long term, we have to think about how we can move beyond the need for subsidies to make these types of technologies and solutions more economic as a matter of course. Government does have some financial resources, but these are limited, and our ability to raise additional resources is constrained. But we do have administrative powers, regulatory powers, power to convene, and purchasing power. And if we're going to mobilize market forces toward a cleaner energy economy, we need to aim for a different kind of partnership with the private sector, a shift away from traditional grants and subsidies. We also need to spend more time on customer buying behavior. When it comes to energy efficiency, for example, we've talked about it being a matter of dollars and cents. Economically, these projects make sense, so the theory is we offer good financing and the work will get done. So we've spent a lot of time developing different financing mechanisms like the PACE programs and the on-bill programs, and people are taking advantage, and we'd like to see more people take advantage of them, but the truth of the matter is thousands of people are taking these loans. But access to financing is not the only barrier to getting people to retrofit their homes and businesses. Not to discount the importance of financing by any stretch, but we may need to put financing into context. When marketing consumer products, marketers start with different customer segments and develop business model for each segment. There's not a one-size-fits-all approach here. There may be a segment that's interested in buying energy efficiency because of the economics, but there may be other segments that want to do things simply that are easy, or they mostly care about comfort and aesthetics. We all know that the simple installation of a programmable thermostat can save enormous amounts of energy. It's an incredibly and relatively simple process, and it's not that expensive. However, most people don't buy these technologies as a means to saving energy or money. They buy thermostats because they're too hot or too cold, or they want a more temperate day-long climate in their home. People don't invest in technologies, they invest in solutions. A typical government approach to marketing programs is centered on the philosophy that the more information, the better. If we increase awareness, we can increase participation in our various initiatives. But it's not solely information that induces change. It's also an attitudinal or emotional reaction to something. Again, information awareness and education, hugely important. But the point is that there's more to this story to really change consumer behavior at a scale that we're looking for. There are other levers that we can use to induce behavioral change. For example, an experiment in hotels to try to get guests to reuse their towels showed that it was less effective to simply ask that they think of the environment and hang up your towel, and better instead to put up a placard telling guests that 75% of guests who stayed in this room hung up their towel for reuse. People want to feel like they're a part of a crowd. And in the efficiency space, NRDC and others are working to show consumers how much energy they use compared to their peers, their neighbors. Using utility data in this way can be a powerful tool to motivate consumers to reduce energy usage. To begin to unleash the market forces, one of the charges the governor has given to Richard is to establish a green bank within NYSERDA to coordinate our existing financing programs and to focus on new programs that focus on removing financial market barriers that are impeding the flow of private capital into the clean energy sector. And when they're fully operational, the bank will offer products including risk mitigation, credit enhancement, project aggregation, data aggregation, contract standardization, and other measures as a way to address some of these additional barriers. We really need to think about what large-scale deployment of clean energy resources can mean for our existing business and regulatory models and how that will impact the industry and consumers. We know it would be good for the environment, but what are the other impacts and how can we manage them? The current utility business model has done many great things. Keeping rates affordable and providing relatively reliable service, it made sense when serving the collective was cheaper than the individual. However, with distributed generation technology costs ever decreasing, it is starting to become viable for individuals to power their homes and facilities separate from the existing grid at comparable cost. We're really at this stage where we can see a true competition on the horizon. In fact, NRG, pretty major energy company, has recently announced that it's starting to market solar PV in combination with gas microturbines as an alternative to the electric grid. This can be very good news for scaling up distributed resources, improving efficiency of our energy use, making our system more resilient. But in a regulatory environment whereby utilities recover fixed costs through variable rates on energy consumption, there could be negative impacts on customers that don't or can't make the switch. Fewer kilowatt hours sold by the utility means that their fixed costs have to be spread over fewer kilowatt hours of people paying. That means the rates are going to go up. So what happens to the utility that has to collect its system-wide fixed costs from fewer and fewer customers? What happens to Aunt Millie if she doesn't have an alternative to the rising costs of staying on the grid? These are not problems yet, and I don't want to sound alarmist, and they're by no means reason to retreat from investments and policies and efficiency and renewables. To the contrary, the success we're having in deploying our clean energy resources shows us that obtaining scale is in our sights, and that forces us to take on these challenges now. And now is the time for government and the private sector to start talking about those challenges and coming up with real solutions. So in conclusion, there's no question we've done a lot of great work and we have a lot of great work ahead of us. The governor has charged his energy team with reinvigorating the private sector to help transition New York to a cleaner and self-sustaining energy economy. And even a cursory look at the resources available at the state level proves that we have a tremendous opportunity to make that a reality. I'm sorry you didn't get to meet Richard or the governor today, but selfishly, I'm glad they couldn't come because I really enjoyed the discussion. So thank you all very much.